for public broadcasting.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Eve Prang Plews. And this is something that happens every other Monday here on WMNF, where Eve Prang Plews, who is a licensed clinical nutritionist, comes on these airwaves for an hour, and she talks about health and nutrition, takes a bunch of phone calls, takes a bunch of emails from people from all over the Tampa Bay area and sometimes all over the country. And Eve is on the phone with us right now. Hey, Eve, happy Memorial Day. How are you?
Hey there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So you're on your cell phone, so we may have a bit of a problem.
I've still got a problem with my facilitator at home. I've got no computer. I've got no phone. I've got no Wi-Fi.
Oh, no.
So
you're really
so
cut off.
We're out of touch.
Cut off from the world. So
yeah, well, this is the time that you're happy that you've got a cell phone.
So, Eve, what's the weather like there in Sarasota today?
It's overcast, but pleasant.
Yeah. And does it look like there's rain on the horizon?
It's Florida. It always looks like there's rain on the horizon. But yesterday,
in the summer in Florida,
dichotomy between the morning and the afternoon. You know, the morning it looked like we were going to have to call Noah and ask him if he had any extra tickets for the Ark. And then by the afternoon, it was a bright, sunshiny day.
Yesterday afternoon was beautiful. All that wind and the big clouds and the blue sky was great.
Gorgeous.
Yep. All right. So we're going to take some phone calls from listeners. We'll take some emails. And I've got a question already, if you want to just jump into it, or what's on your mind? What have you been thinking about?
Well, my greatest concern this week is what happened at the Environmental Protection Agency with Scott Pruitt. Environmental protection. I mean, listen to the title of that agency. It's to protect the environment, to protect us and the environment. And when they found out that DuPont had poisoned water all around their Teflon manufacturing plant, I've been talking about that on the air and in my lectures actually for years, because, 70,000 people brought a class action suit against DuPont as a result of the chemicals that are in the Teflon. And so when a report came out that showed that not just the water around the plant itself was contaminated with the Teflon chemicals, but water everywhere in the United States. Every animal they tested, every human they tested, had these chemicals in their bloodstream. And yet the EPA withheld that information, has withheld giving that report to the American public because they were afraid it was going to be a PR nightmare. Excuse me? We've got contaminated water, and those of us that are hip to the water situation have known about this for a long time. We have pharmaceuticals in the water, because when somebody takes their statin drug or their birth control pill or their antibiotic or their antidepressant, those things end up in the sewage. They end up in the stream, because we don't metabolize 100% of those chemicals when we take them. In fact, they just found opioids in shellfish off of the state of Washington. Opioids and shellfish. So, you know, when we found out that there were pesticides and herbicides and all of the ides, it doesn't matter whether it's an algicide or rodenticide, it's designed to kill something. And so we find those things in our water. We look at the water and we think that it's clean, and we've got residues from gasoline and fuel oil and dry cleaning solution. Three of the things that contaminate Florida's water. We have rocket fuel. I mean, you say, well, I don't live near Cape Canaveral, but you blast off firecrackers on New Year's Eve and 4th of July, and that stuff contains the same perchlorate that shows up in rocket fuel. That ends up in the water. But now we find that this PFOS and these other chemicals that are from Teflon, that they were saying it was safe at 70 parts per trillion. You can't even comprehend 70 parts per trillion. Most people can't even comprehend a billion, much less a trillion. And now they're saying only 14 parts per trillion is safe. That's not even the period at the end of a sentence. And so not only did Scott Pruitt refuse to release that report about the contaminated water, but furthermore, when he had a meeting, he had a closed meeting, and they bodily escorted the reporter out, grabbed her by the shoulder, and shoved her out of the building. This just isn't right. People need to know that if you've got a Teflon pan in the house, throw it out today. Don't use it again. Doesn't matter whether it has scratches in it or not. It's got chemicals in it that are dangerous to us. But moreover, we have to speak up about the fact that the Environmental Protection Agency is there to protect Americans, and it's not doing it.
You know, when you mentioned the Environmental Protection Agency, I was reminded of that story last week that said that the U.S. government spent $3.5 million protecting Scott Pruitt from supposed security threats because he's gotten so many death threats. And they really haven't been able to produce the death threats. But I thought we were going to change the name of the EPA to the SPPA, the Scott Pruitt Protection Agency, because they're spending so much money on his personal protection.
Egomaniacs abound in this administration. There's no question about that. But when you threaten the lives of all Americans, it's just wrong.
You know, the president is famous for saying that he's going to drain the swamp and take out the special interests from Washington, D.C., but would it be fair to say that DuPont and the other chemical industries have a friend in Scott Pruitt, and what is a bigger special interest than the chemical industry?
Well, they're the lover. They're not just friends. They're lovers. I mean, they're so in bed with each other that it's a revolving door between the EPA, the FDA, and these industries. People need to understand that big food, big agriculture, big meat, and big pharma are all the children of Big Chem. And Big Chem is the child of big oil. And so that's the way the money flows. The oil becomes the chemical becomes the foundation for big agriculture through using pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. It becomes part of big food by manufacturing artificial ingredients. It becomes part of big meat because it makes genetically modified soybeans and corn, which is what most of the livestock eat today. And it becomes big pharma because it makes the chemicals that go into the drugs. So once you see how the money flows, once you see the nepotism and the interconnectedness between those agencies, then you know that it's only going to take education as a way to awaken people to these hazards.
But
Education and action.
When you see all these people at Trump rallies, though, saying, yeah, he's changing Washington, he's throwing out the special interests, he's draining the swamp, and yet the people who are so closely allied with industry and special interests are gaining so much power in Washington, D.C. What do you say to your friends who are Trump supporters? What do you say to them when they say that he's draining the swamp?
If you knew there were poisons in the water and that Scott Pruitt was covering that up, would you give that water to your grandchildren and your children? We have to personalize this. It has to become relevant in people's lives. You know, just because the president tramps around, just because he tells 3,000 lies, that doesn't necessarily affect people personally. In order for something to be relevant, it has to affect them personally. And so when somebody gets on the television, like I saw the other day, and was just delighted he was getting $15 more a week, I don't think $720 a year is going to make a difference in how I live. And I know it'll make a difference in how some people live, but they're not getting $15 a week more. So we have to make it personal and relevant. And the nature of it is everyone has lost someone to heart disease. Everyone has lost someone to cancer. Everyone has lost someone to the other conditions that are the major 10 killers, including medical mistakes. You know, medical mistakes and death by doctors is up there. You know, some people say it's number two after heart disease. Some people say it's number three after cancer. But the circumstances are when you've lost someone to those conditions, and you're willing to endorse the ongoing use of the chemicals that set those conditions up, then I don't know if you can remove that bias, because that is then a bias that's burned into the brain in such a way that even if you put the facts in front of them, they're not going to change their mind.
Well, Eve Prang-Plues is on the phone with us today. We're talking about health and nutrition here on WMNF in Tampa. And we're going to take some phone calls. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And if you want to call in and have your question answered by Eve, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. And let's go to Russ in St. Petersburg. Russ, you're on with Eve. What's your question?
Hey, Eve. Is there some kind of a nutritional reason for somebody getting a sty?
A sty on the eyelid?
Yes.
Well, that's a release of toxic material. That's a release of bacteria. The bacteria often live at the bottom of the hair follicles of the eyelashes. And something allows that bacteria to thrive. You know, the use of antibiotics or the way that most doctors treat it, I use a homeopathic remedy called Cilicia. And as long as you don't have any artificial parts in your body, like a pacemaker or a screw in your ankle or, staples in your gallbladder, then you can use homeopathic Cilicia because it pushes out foreign material. So needless to say, if somebody's got an artificial hip, we don't want to push that material out. So Cilicia, low dose, 10X, can be used along with hot compresses. But essentially, in Chinese medicine, the eye and liver are brother and sister, meaning anything that happens to the eye has to do with how the liver functions. So at some point, the liver got exposed to something toxic. That allowed that bacteria to thrive and create that little pimple that we call a sty.
Okay, and so when you say something foreign in the body, would a stent qualify as such?
Yes.
Pardon me?
Yes, we don't use Cilicia when anybody has any kind of foreign material in their body. So if you've got a stent in one of your arteries, then that would not be an option. But using hot compresses, your ophthalmologist or your optician can give you a topical use antibiotic cream to use on that sty, not something that you're going to buy at the drugstore, but something that comes from your eye doctor.
Okay.
And whether it's an MD doctor or an OD doctor, whether it's an ophthalmologist or the person that gives you your glasses, they can prescribe in that arena.
So we're going to have to go the antibiotic route in this case, then.
Well, if you've got a stent, I would never use Cilicia on you.
Okay, all right. Well, as always, Eve, I really appreciate your information, and you know what number I'll be calling this time next week.
All
thanks,
right.
Russ. Thanks for
thanks,
your
Russ.
Call.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You'll hear from me next Monday.
All right, thanks. And Russ is referring to our fund drive that starts Wednesday morning at 6 o'clock and goes till next Wednesday. So Wednesday to Wednesday, and we hope to raise, I think, $220,000 is our goal during that week-long drive. You know, Eve, Russ mentioned antibiotics, but a sty does go away after a while, right?
Well, if the immune system is able to respond well enough. For some individuals, that sty can keep growing and get, you know, the size of a pencil eraser. And, you know, it's not only uncomfortable, there is the potential of that bacteria spreading.
Yeah, so you don't want that to happen. Okay. Sally writes this, I'm 66 years old and I'm otherwise healthy. And until recently, ANA blood test came back positive. I then took an SSA test, which came back positive for lupus, a reading of 162. I have inflammation in all my joints, dry mouth, itchy skin, and difficulty sleeping. After I received my blood work, my rheumatologist told me to wait and see how this progresses. He wants to see me in 6 months. I would like to take a more proactive approach and wondered if you could advise me about nutrition and supplements that might help support my body.
Well, Sally, first off, I have to tell you that I'm real over doctors saying wait and see, because there are some conditions where that's smart. This doesn't happen to be one of them. When your antinuclear antibody, your ANA test, is positive, oftentimes it's positive for years, as much as 15 years, before we actually get a diagnosis of an autoimmune disease. when we realize that an autoimmune disease means the body is allergic to itself, it's reacting to itself. And whether that comes out as Sjogren's disease or lupus or Hashimoto's thyroiditis or MS or any one of 50 different autoimmune diseases, in all instances, the immune system has gotten confused. And people say, oh, well, I want something to build my immune system. Well, that isn't really the smartest thing to do. The immune system is already hypervigilant. The first thing I want to tell you is that this week I am going down to Hollywood, Florida, to the Institute for Functional Medicine annual symposium, and the subject of that symposium is autoimmune diseases. So actually, 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have even more information to give you. But the first and primary information is not necessarily about using supplements. It's about making sure that you do not have non-natural molecules in your body. When you use artificial colors and artificial flavors and preservatives and emulsifiers and all the things that are in processed food, these are chemicals that don't occur in nature. And they're one of the things that turn around and confuse the immune system. So to eat 100% organic diet, to know that the chemicals that you're using in your house to wash your dishes, the laundry detergent you're using, the stuff you use to wipe off the counter, clean the mirrors, all of those things need to be in the non-toxic category. And there are several lines that are available that are sold at conventional grocery stores. They're not just sold at health food stores. The products that you put on your body, the cream rinse you use on your hair, the moisturizer you use on your skin, any of those things, they need to be 100% organic, because the more you put these artificial, non-natural, synthetic chemicals in your body, the more confused the body gets. And so I would say you start with looking at your diet, looking at everything that's under your sink in the kitchen that you're cleaning with, everything that you're putting on your skin. Look at those things and clean up that part of the diet and call me in 2 weeks.
All right. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and we're talking about health and nutrition, as we do every other Monday here on WMNF between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m., with Eve Prang Plews. And let's go to Patty in Newport Richey. Hi, Patty. You're on WMNF.
Hi.
What's your question?
Hi. I just wondered, Wednesday I have to get an endoscopy because I have stomach polyps, and they get bigger and bigger, you know, every time he checks them, which is about every 5-6 years. So he wants to go in and just biopsy them and remove some of the larger ones. Is there something I can take that you could recommend that would do that without surgery?
No.
No?
No, they need to be removed and they need to be biopsied.
Okay.
Even though only 1% of polyps turn cancerous,
yeah,
the circumstances are that there are some people that are lump and bump and mole and wart makers.
Yeah.
You know, they just make these. And so, you know, you look at them as a child and they've only got a few little moles or spots or, you know, lumps and bumps. But mm-hmm. there are people, they just have a tendency to make cysts and make these, they're really trash dumps. What the body loves to do is put trash in a pile
mm-hmm.
and then wall it off. And so when we look at these lump and bump and mole and wart makers, it usually runs in the family. You know, Uncle Bob has it and Aunt Betty has it and Grandpa had it. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, we'll see this as a genetic lineage. But the smartest thing to do is exactly what you're doing, which is having them examined.
Okay.
Now, there is some conflict in medicine right now as to whether the use of folate, and I'm not talking folic acid is synthetic. I'm talking about folate, and folate in a specific form, which is called 5-MTHF, 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, 5-MTHF.
Uh-huh.
This is the way that the body utilizes folate. In other words, when you take a vitamin, it's not always readily usable. It has to go through a transformation, just like you do with your digestion. And so the nature of 5-MTHF, we have a genetic default in this particular pathway, and 20% of Americans have one of the genes. You know, you got two genes, one from your mama and one from your daddy. And so if one of the genes is funky, then that's 20% of the population, but another 20% of the population, both of the genes are funky. And so you've got 40% of the population that doesn't really metabolize folate very well. And so this can be a contributor to the polyp, a deficiency of this folate. So your doctor can run tests for both B12 and folate in its end use. In other words, we don't just test vitamin B12 in the blood. We test methylmalonic acid, which is how the body utilizes that. And then with folate, we test something called FIGLU, F-I-G-L-U. FIGLU tells us how we're using folate. So that would be one of the alleys I would look down to see if you potentially have a default in that genetic pathway that you might be able to shore up with folate. But I would not just automatically give you more folate until I had that tested.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Eve. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, Patty, good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WMNF 88.5 FM, and we're going to take this call from Allegra, who's in West Palm Beach. Hi, Allegra. You're on with Eve. What's your question?
Hello there, Eve. Hi there, Rob. Yes, before all this rain, I was going outdoors to sit in the sun a lot. And all of a sudden, I got all these sunspots. And I do recall on a past show, you mentioned something about one of the main ingredients in dandruff shampoo. Is it sulfuric acid?
Selenium sulfide.
Selenium sulfide.
Selenium, which is the name of a mineral, a trace mineral. Sulfide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, is because of, this is a symptom, but is the root cause like something to do with my immune system? Like
No. If you're talking about white spots on your skin,
yeah,
that's a topical fungus. It's called Tinea versicolor.
Oh,
versicolor, cool. Many colors. Tinea are topical funguses, and so that's why you can go to one of the tack shops, you know, where they sell horse equipment and feed for goats and all that.
Yeah.
And they will sell dog mange shampoo.
Oh.
And you say, well, I don't have a dog, and my dog doesn't have mange. But it has a higher concentration of selenium sulfide than you can find in a dandruff shampoo. You can get a prescription for a dandruff shampoo. It's kind of mustard-colored and smells like sulfur. But to get that concentration of selenium sulfide, you would have to have a prescription. So the dog mane shampoo might be sold by your vet, or it might be sold at one of these tack shops. And they're allowed to sell the higher dose for an animal, but they're not allowed to sell the higher dose for a human. Isn't that crazy?
That is pretty wild. I work at a Hippocrates, and over there it's like, you know, whatever you put on your skin, you should be able to consume. Since this is, it's not something I would put on my skin every day, but
We use it 5 to 7 days in a row, lather it up, leave it on your skin for 10 minutes, and it will kill that fungus.
Okay.
Then you're done with it.
All right, and then I can, detox after it. All right. I think that's all.
But, you
just
know, a
rock
lot
the
of
Dalmatian
these,
look for a while.
A lot of times these topical funguses and these topical yeasts that people get, women sometimes get them under their breasts on their bra line. Diabetics especially will get them on their neck. You'll look at the neck of a diabetic and you'll see a dark line where that wrinkle on their neck is. And so very often this is because there's a high glucose count and that, you know, there's lots of sugar in the blood. And so there's an opportunity for these yeasts and funguses to thrive. And, this particular center that you're talking about, which emphasizes using a lot of juicing, there are times when people are getting a very high sugar diet, even though they're using really high-quality organic food there. They're still low on protein and high on sugar-containing juices and fruits. And so that may allow you to develop those Tinea versicolor spots and somebody else not to.
Oh, I do like sugar a lot, so that might be the overall culprit.
Oh, boy. All right.
Okay.
All right, Allegra.
Busted.
Yeah, there you
busted,
go.
Allegra.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Allegra.
Okay, happy Memorial Day.
Okay. Happy Memorial Day. Here's an email from Lynn in Palm Harbor. She writes, if K2 is for clotting, is it contra-
No. K2 is not for clotting.
Okay.
And K1 is for clotting.
All right. So she goes on to say, is it contraindicated for heart disease? Now, describe for remind us what K1 and K2 are.
Well, they're vitamins. And so just like, the B vitamins, we numbered them, B1, B2, B3, niacin, thiamine, riboflavin. But, you know, when we got to vitamin E, we didn't number them anymore. We named them alpha, gamma, tocopherol, delta tocopherol, et cetera. So it depends on when the development of the understanding of these nutrients were, whether they were named or numbered. So K1 was the first one they found, and that's the nutrient that shows up in dark leafy greens like Brussels sprouts and collards and turnips and stuff like that. And when people are on blood thinners, they tell them to restrict the use of those foods. I'm not in agreement with that. I think you should use those foods on a daily basis because they give you so much protection, and then adjust your warfarin or whatever blood thinning medication to that diet. But K2 mostly has to do with how K2 and K4 both have to do with how we actually make stronger bones. And so there's no evidence that K2 has a relationship to coronary disease, to my knowledge.
Okay. All right.
I use it all the time with clients that are osteoporotic.
All right. Deborah writes this. I'm totally simpatico with your expert, but if everyone were to throw away the Teflon pans, wouldn't the water table be even more adversely affected? Is there a way to dispose of Teflon pans without the chemical getting into the waste stream, writes Deborah.
Put it in your attic.
Keep it upstairs, all right.
Just don't use it.
All right, don't use it. All right. By throw it away, you mean don't use it.
Don't use it.
All right, so let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. And let's go to Suzanne in Clearwater. Hi, Suzanne, you're on. What's your question?
Hi. I have a tumor on my pituitary gland. I had it about 3 years ago, and it was removed. And at that time, it had been pressing on the optic nerve, and I didn't have it after the surgery. I didn't have it checked until just recently. I've now gotten on Medicare, and I've got better health coverage than I had before. So it has come back. It's not pressing on the optic nerve anymore, but it is close on the carotid. And so in preparation for surgery, I've started taking curcumin to help shrink with inflammation. But I was wondering if there was anything else that I could take. I realized prior to the surgery, I have to stop the curcumin because it's a blood thinner as well. But are there any other supplements or anything that might be beneficial either before surgery or after surgery? I pretty much eat about half raw, half cooked vegetables. I would say it's at least 95% organic. I do primarily sheep's milk type cheese and eggs and nuts and beans to get enough protein. So I'm trying to balance my diet out. But I was wondering, supplement-wise, if there's anything else I could take that would be helpful.
No, I think the most important thing that you do is to use a high dose of Arnica on the day that you go in for the surgery. You can't take anything by mouth, food or beverages, usually after midnight.
Uh-huh.
And they usually have you admitted at 5 in the morning or 7 in the morning. Is that what your plan is?
Yes.
Okay. And so homeopathic remedies can be used without any water because they just dissolve on your tongue.
Okay.
And so at a health food store, you can get an Arnica dose of 30C.
30C.
And I'm saying the number 30 and the letter C.
Okay.
And if you take a dose of that first thing in the morning, you know, rinse your mouth out so you don't have to swallow that water, just to rinse your mouth out with water so your mouth is nice and moist. And then take this dose of 30C and just let it dissolve on your tongue. And it will help to reduce the bruising. And when you reduce the bruising, you reduce the swelling. And when you reduce the swelling, you reduce the discomfort. The circumstances, I have no recommendations in terms of reducing the size of a tumor. I have no evidence whatsoever that curcumin would do that.
Mm-hmm.
First off, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly out there. As curcumin has gotten more popular, a lot of product has flooded the market. And sometimes it's just a capsule with turmeric in it. Turmeric is the spice that the curcuminoids are derived from.
Right.
But you have to derive the curcuminoids out of the turmeric. Because when they're concentrated, then they're a whole different story. The problem is a lot of companies are using toxic solvents to get the curcumin out of the turmeric. So there's only a few companies that we can trace from farm to capsule that they're not using any of these toxic solvents. So, yes, I'm in agreement that curcumin and these concentrates of curcumin are very good for inflammation. But I have no evidence they would shrink a tumor, and actually there's no advantage to it now that you're scheduled for surgery.
Well, after the surgery, they will be doing a radiation treatment
mm-hmm.
because they can't operate where it's right next to the carotid.
Right.
And so that's my main concern is the radiation
well,
treatment
when
afterwards.
You get the radiation, when you get the radiation, the use of antioxidants of all types, you know, vitamins, all of the things that are high in antioxidants, which are your dark-colored fruits and vegetables.
Right.
You know, if you choose a cantaloupe over a honeydew, if you choose red grapes over white grapes, you're getting higher concentrations of antioxidants. So you tip your diet toward those dark-colored foods. A sweet potato has more antioxidants than a white potato. Broccoli has more than cauliflower. Every time you choose the darker, the better, you're getting more antioxidants in there.
Okay.
So you really have to find out what the, you know, the regrowth of pituitary tumors is not uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
Very many people who have pituitary growth end up having a repetition or the use of radiation post-surgical. And, you know, this is one of the places that we want to really applaud technical medicine. You know, there are so many people, and I certainly see them in my practice, and sometimes I hear them here on the show, and I know you're not one of them, but that just want to take an herb. I don't want to take this medicine. I don't want to be taking high blood pressure medicine, whatever. You know, I just want to take an herb.
And no, when things are appropriate, you need to take
right. I mean, your life would be in danger otherwise.
Surely.
And so people have a tendency to try to make a black and white thing out of this as far as holistic medicine versus allopathic medicine. But, you know, we want to be thankful that they've got the technology to do this kind of stuff because it will lengthen your life.
Oh, certainly.
And so, yes, there are nutrients that we can use. There are herbs that we can use to do different things. But let's see what the result is of that pathology, and let's see what the result is of your surgery. And then we can address it better. But right now, my primary recommendation would be Onica before the procedure and high antioxidant diet after the procedure. Yes, taking vitamin C is good, but eating things that have vitamin C, the strawberries, the pineapple, it's not just the citrus, the green pepper, the broccoli, the cabbage, you know, getting those things in the diet, there are other nutrients that are in those foods that's not just vitamin C, and they work synergistically together. And so that's my strongest recommendation, and good luck with your surgery, Suzanne.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your show.
Thanks.
Well, love your station.
Thanks, Suzanne. Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to go to this email from Deb and Luch. Deb writes, my partner, a 67-year-old man, was diagnosed with kidney stones after a trip to the ER with acute pain. So we set about trying to find natural ways to make the stones pass. He's been drinking Nopal, N-O-P-A-L, cactus juice, a.k.a. prickly pear cactus juice, on the advice of a friend from Central America who swears by it. He's been drinking this refreshing drink for a month now, but does not know if the stone has moved. Can you suggest anything else he could try?
Well, first off, when you have an ultrasound done, then you know the size of the stone. And so little teeny tiny stones are dissolvable. They can break apart. Middle-sized stones are the greatest hazard, because if you do one of these flushing procedures of trying to get the stone out and that stone gets into the ureter and gets stuck, then you're in emergency room surgery within an hour. So there is some recklessness in terms of trying to pass a stone when you don't know the size. Really large stones, you don't break apart. So finding out whether they were teeny tiny, mid-sized, or large stones would help to classify whether or not something could be used to try to break them down. I wouldn't even reveal the name of the herb that's used to help to break them down, because I don't want people to think they can just take that and break them down. And what they do is they make it smaller and just enough to get stuck in the ureter.
Mm. Eve, how could you avoid kidney stones in the future? Is there a way to do that diet-wise?
Well, there's several tracks here. We do know that chronic dehydration can create kidney stones, people that just do not drink enough water. And, you know, I get clients in my practice on a regular basis say, yeah, I just don't like water. Well, heck, your body's 60% water. You better learn to like water after you put it through an absolute 1 micron filter to get Scott Pruitt out of your water. The nature of us avoiding dehydration contributes to so many conditions in the body. So that's number one. There is a suspicion now, and I only say a suspicion because the evidence is not profound enough yet, that there is a bacteria that may actually initiate the formation of stones. Also, there are foods that are high in oxalates. Oxalic acid is a compound. It's in chocolate, it's in beets, it's in almonds, it's in blackberries, it's in spinach. You know, things that we think are good for us. But some people don't pass this oxalic acid easily, and so we can create what are called calcium oxalate stones. So there are different varieties of stones as well. And so if somebody does pass a stone, capture it and let it be assayed so we can find out whether it's a true calcium stone or a calcium oxalate stone, because then those people need to limit those foods that are high in oxalic acid. Oxalic acid is in virtually every vegetable and many fruits, but it's these really high amounts like chocolate and beets and rhubarb and spinach and blackberries and almonds that become troublesome.
All right, that's good to know. And you're listening to a live program. Even though it's Memorial Day, Eve Prang-Plues has generously donated her time to answer your question about health and nutrition, as she does every other Monday. Next Monday in this time slot, John Butts will be here, and Eve will be back, and we'll be fundraising, trying to raise some money to keep WMNF going for another few months. And let's go to HW in Sarasota. HW, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, what's your question for Eve?
My question is, I was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer through a biopsy, and I've got percentages ranging from 0 to 80% in 12 areas tested. They've given me this medicine by bicalutamide to stop the progression, but he's saying I'll either have to go with a removal or radiation. But I've also been working with a protocol which includes MSM, beta gluten, liver flush, aloe arborescens to actually kill the cancer. I'm wondering if this protocol alone I should be working with, or should I go with the radiation? And if I do go with the radiation, will any of this stuff interfere with the modern methods, or should I continue to do this? It's really kind of questionable here on certain things.
I would tell you, if you were my husband or my brother, I would have it surgically removed or radiated.
Okay.
What you're doing, the protocol that you're talking about with these various herbs and ingredients, there is no proof that we've got anything that is going to, quote, kill cancer cells. When these are taken orally, you're getting a global dose. The whole body is affected. It's not concentrated at the prostate. If that kind of combination could kill prostate cancer cells, we would certainly know about it.
Right.
You know, this is what I talked about earlier, when people are willing to go a holistic route when there's no evidence. You know, like Deb said in the prior phone call, you know, his buddy recommended prickly pear juice. You know, I'm going to hold my medical education up against anybody who's doing Google searches or taking information from their buddy who happens to be selling multi-level marketing products out of their garage. So, you know, give me some evidence that this particular cocktail is eliminated. When you've got 80% of 12 biopsies that are showing that you've got cancer in there, I would take action immediately from a surgical standpoint.
Right.
What happens is once the prostate cancer gets out of the capsule, then we know that where prostate cancer migrates to is the bone. And if you went through the shopping list of all of the cancers that you could have, I guarantee you, you don't want to get bone cancer.
Right.
So
and I just
making
had a...
sure that the source is gone is what's my most important recommendation.
Right, and I just just had the bone scan done. I'm waiting for the results on that, but I have a feeling it went a little too long. My insurance was interrupted for a six-month period. I was supposed to have it done 6 to 7 months ago. He says it's slow-growing, and I did have time, but who knows?
That's good news.
Yeah.
That's
but thank
good
you
news.
For your advice. I really appreciate it.
All right,
you're welcome,
HW,
and
thank
good luck,
you.
HW.
Thank you, HW. And Herb in Tampa writes, is grapeseed extract a supplement worth taking?
First off, I'm a big fan of grapeseed oil as long as it's done organically. But grapeseed extract, if it's OPC 85, again, there's such a big difference in the quality of these supplements. That what we want to do is make sure that we're taking something that is a high quality. You know, I wouldn't necessarily put grapeseed extract above things like a high quality multivitamin or the use of fish oil or the use of extra antioxidants or probiotics. You know, once people start getting out into this netherworld of supplements, we need to know what are we trying to achieve. You know, are we trying to treat a condition that's already there? Are we trying to prevent a certain condition that is known from your history or known from the genetic pattern of your family? Before I can say, oh, yeah, that's really good for you, I need to know what's going on in the body.
All right. And if Herb wants to email back and be a little bit more specific, he can do that. And also, if you want to email your question in to Eve, here's our address. It's dj@wmnf.org. Thanks to Frank Knox. He's come in on this holiday to answer phones. Frank, thank you for doing that. We're going to go to Ralph in Palm Harbor. Hi, Ralph. You're on the air with Eve. What's your question about health and nutrition?
Hi. I've been diagnosed with Lyme disease like almost 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago. So I went through the first phase. They give me doxycycline, and then they said it went away, and then they said it's back, and it's been going, but I've been feeling, you know, I don't feel any better. Now, I don't have joint pains, and, you know, I can't walk and all that. I don't have any of that stuff.
Do you have recurrent night fevers?
I'm sorry?
Night sweat. Do you have recurrent night sweat?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Night sweat. You sweat
no,
at night.
No, night sweat. Nope. No.
Okay.
I don't have no fever. I have no aches and pains. I go to a Lyme specialist. They've been doing this for about 6 or 8 months, trying different things, but nothing works. But my problem I have is I don't have no motivation, and I feel spacey. When I get up in the morning, maybe for a half hour, I feel fairly well, but I'm all spacey. Like I feel like I had 2 or 3 drinks. And I had a scan, CT scans, MRI on my head and everything. I don't find anything in there for nothing. But I still
only feel this way. And so do you have a blood pressure machine at home?
I'm sorry?
You have a blood pressure machine at home?
Yes, I do. My blood pressure is good.
What numbers do you get upon arising?
I get about 125, 130 over like 60 to 70 and like 60, 58, 60.
Sometimes that spaciness in the morning is low blood pressure. That your numbers are not demonstrating low blood pressure, but 125 over 60 is a pretty big spread. And so one of the things that you could do first thing in the morning when you wake up, when you sit on the side of the bed, lift your legs up so that they're straight out in front of you. So you're sitting on the edge of the bed, and you're just going to lift one leg, put it down, lift one leg, put it down, flap your arms like you got wings, and drive up your blood pressure as a result of that movement. And see if you can put yourself in a door frame, hold on to the door frame so you don't feel unsteady, and just kind of walk in place there. And see if driving up your blood pressure a few points helps to clear your mind. So that's the easiest. You don't want to miss the obvious.
Well,
so make sure you take your blood pressure meter into your doctor on your next appointment and verify that your meter is in agreement with his meter.
Yeah. My blood pressure has seemed, it goes very, sometimes they did give me Lisapril, 5 milligrams to take, but half the time it's not high enough, so I haven't really taken it. But I do ride a bicycle to try to keep me up. I feel all right with that. And it just seems, I just feel more spacey than anything. Now, I can try the blood pressure thing, but I've been taking it, and
the
that's
other,
never really
the
helped
other,
me.
The other
and then
thing
they
that
tried to put
talk.
Me on some antidepressant, but I couldn't take the SSRIs. They just
Ralph,
don't work with me.
Ralph, we don't have very much time left. So the nature of what happens first thing in the morning.
Okay.
You know the honey bears, the little squeezy bears that have honey in them?
Yes.
Okay, what you want to do is first thing in the morning when you get up, so these are a couple of exercises you can try over a couple of days, the movement and then the honey test. What I want you to do is take a half a teaspoon of honey, only a half a teaspoon, and within 4 minutes, it will help you revive. And see if within the first 4 or 5 minutes after you take that honey, you feel a little brighter, a little more alert. The nature of this is if you're waking up hypoglycemic and your blood sugar is too low, then it will also give you this spacey, kind of confused, drunky feeling. But if you try the honey test and it doesn't work, we know we've eliminated that. So sometimes with these vague kinds of complaints, we have to try to assay it according to a process of elimination. The third thing that I'd recommend is that you do a 4-time cortisol saliva test. Cortisol is the hormone that is manufactured by your adrenal glands. And if your cortisol is very low first thing in the morning, then that will also lead to this lack of motivation, low energy, etc. A lot of doctors run cortisol blood tests. I do not find value in those. I find value in the cortisol salivary test, where we do 4 samples in one day. When you get up in the morning, noon, 5 o'clock, and 10 at night. And those 4 saliva samples are then sent to a specialty lab, and they graph how your cortisol works. And so if your cortisol is low first thing in the morning, there are nutrients that can be given that can help to amp that up. This does not ring true for me as a Lyme symptom specifically.
Okay, I agree with that.
But one of the things that you want to have tested is your C6, the letter C and the number 6. C6 will actually is measuring the DNA of the Lyme, and we'll find out if your Lyme is active.
I had those tests, and I had a tremendous amount of blood work done. I mean, just 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about a tremendous amount of blood work.
My blood work's good. Everything's
Ralph,
good.
I always feel the same. I'm not talking about a tremendous amount of blood work. I'm talking about that test.
Yeah. Okay.
Period.
All right. Ralph, thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm going to try to remember all that. I hope somebody's writing it down for me, but thanks for the call.
Okay.
Thank
Ralph, thanks
well,
a lot.
People should know when they call up that they have a notepad next to them.
Yeah, bring a notepad when you call. That's really great advice. Let's go to Robert, who's in Port Charlotte. Robert, you're on the air with Eve Prang Plews, and we're talking about nutrition. What's your question?
Thank you very much. Listen, I am diabetic. I take Victoza and I take metformin, but my question is, how can I get my fruits when I know fruits have a lot of sugar?
Well, keep your fruits to berries only.
I'm sorry?
Berries only and a small green apple.
Yeah, I quit eating fruits because I'm afraid of all the sugar.
Well, I'm giving you the recommendation. Use berries and small green apples. Those can be your fruit.
So, Robert, there you go.
Otherwise,
berries
have to limit volume.
Berries and the small green apple.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you very much. Robert, thank you too. Thanks. Karen writes this, and this is a question I think that came up last time, Eve. Karen writes, what are your thoughts on CBD oil?
First off, I think that it's that marijuana medicine is really the door to the future. I think there's going to be lots of discoveries made now that more research is being done on marijuana medicine. And so there's all kinds of CBD oils. There's all sorts of concentrations. There's different plants extracted from. I don't think we have a shopping list yet of all of the different components in addition to CBD that are in the plant that and what efficacy they have on different things. So I'm a fan, but I can't say that, you know, 12-to-1 ratio is the best for this and 4-to-1 ratio is the best for that. I just don't think there's enough information out there.
Okay, so we got to wait for the studies.
Well, and people have to know that it's not all the same. You know, when they go in the health food store and they buy CBD oil from hemp and they pay $70 a bottle and they rub it on their sore back and their back feels better, well, fine. We don't need to go any further. But if somebody's going to ingest it orally, we got a different story here. We need to know how these things are processed, just like the curcumin and the curcuminoids I talked about earlier.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Diana in Port Richey. Hi, Diana. We're talking about health and nutrition here on 88.5 FM.
Hi, Eve. Thank you for taking my call. I know you've reviewed this before, but I am now ready with pen and paper. We are a family of four, two little kids, two adults. And currently, we actually go to Walmart. We get the water from the machine. We don't drink what's on tap here at home. But we are interested in simplifying and getting a filter in the house and wondered what you suggest, what kind of budget that looks like, you know, what kind of a system would be least
an absolute one micron filter, which means it's smaller than a micron. It's usually a half micron of compressed carbon is the thing that you want to buy. And you're going to use it at your end use sink, commonly your kitchen sink. It's okay. Going to be about the size of a 3-pound coffee can, and the filter is going to be about the size of a 1-pound coffee can. It needs to be in stainless steel housing, and you can get them where they get plumbed under the sink like I have it at my home, or you can get it where it sits on the counter if you happen to be living in an apartment or a rental unit where you can't plumb it under the sink. Depending on how much usage is done will depend on how often you change the cartridge. Cartridges are about $80 a year. If there's, you know, a lot of use, if you're cooking a lot at home as well as you and the kids drinking that water, then you might have to change the cartridge twice a year. Generally, those filters are a little over $300, but once the first year is up, then, you know, all you've got is the replacement of the cartridge, which is about $1.50 a week. I don't trust the machines that you put the money in and get the water out, because there are no regulations as far as keeping that machine clean. There are no Florida state regulations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no federal regulations, and there's no Florida state regulations. I just don't know. I think the amount of money that you'd spend and the amount of schlepping you would be doing, dragging those gallons home every week,
We, in fact, walk because we've become pedestrians. So we're, in fact, walking with a bike trailer with two of these 5-gallon containers, and it's really arduous, you know. So we've talked about that.
Yeah, that's over 100 pounds.
It is a lot. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
you're
Diana.
Welcome.
What an adventure that is. Diana, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Julie writes this, if you own a restaurant out there and you can supply WM&F for late dinners and or lunch or breakfast, please write to Miss Julie at julie@wmnf.org because we're a little bit short for upcoming drive as a way to feed our hungry volunteers. Eve, we're out of time. But you're going to be back at least via phone next week, right?
That's right. I'll be there.
Okay. As we fundraise and try to keep the radio station going, this commercial-free radio station going for another few months. Eve, thank you very much, and have a happy Memorial Day.
And I will remember that Memorial Day is for us to remember those who have served, because we are the home of the free because of the brave.
All right. Well, Eve, thank you so much. Thanks. And
we'll
talk to you in 2 weeks.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. This is WMNF Tampa. Stay tuned.